Hey guys, do you like video games? Do you like heavy metal? Comic books, movies, theme parks, or even cool TV shows? We've got the place for you. Time to rock out with your geek out. Metal Geeks! Welcome, Geekazoids. Here are your hosts. Geek it out, fellas!
Welcome, everyone, to the Metal Geeks Podcast. I am one of your hosts. I am Kerry G. I am the Metal Geek, along with...
George Tripsis.
Unfortunately, our other co-host is not here this evening.
Dave.
Poor Dave. Dave's not here, man. But we have somebody...
He's at Disneyland, right?
No, he's not at Disneyland yet.
Oh, he's going to Disneyland.
He's going to Disney World.
Disney World.
Whole world. But we have somebody... I want to say somebody better. We have Chris Gore. How you doing, sir?
What's up, man?
Hey, man. How's it going? Thanks
great.
For having me on the show.
Thank you for coming on the show, man.
I love you guys because I see your posts on social media.
Oh.
And you guys are very funny.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you.
We're glad social media works for somebody.
I pay attention, so that's good.
Yeah, that is good.
I met you a couple of years ago at, I think it was D23. The... First time I'd ever been to a D23 convention, which is a lot of fucking fun.
What was that,
man.
Like a couple of years ago?
2013, yeah.
Yeah, it was August 2013, and that was a blast. And I remember being really disappointed because there was no Star Wars news.
Yes, exactly right.
They're saving it all for this year.
And with you, exactly. Well, were you in the room when they were doing the big presentation? They said, "And we have nothing to announce related to Star Wars."
Yes, I was. I was way upstairs during that event, but it was still a lot of fun. They brought out they paraded a lot of celebrities out there. You know,
isn't that what it's cool for?
And that was like a first big glimpse at actually Guardians of the Galaxy, which was pretty awesome.
That's right.
I don't know if you remember that they showed like a few minutes of a scene. It wasn't quite like a trailer. Was more of a teaser cut together, not even finished effects. And I don't know, I thought it was weird. It was one of those things where you just couldn't tell. But I think now we've learned never to underestimate Disney.
No.
Definitely don't underestimate, like, you know, just like any of those, like Pixar. I think we saw a look at, what was that, Inside Out?
Inside Out, yeah.
Which is coming out. So, yeah, that was fun. So we met at D23. That's awesome. Wow, that was a super fun event.
Now, Chris, do you remember Kerry?
No. That's okay, though.
I gotta be honest.
I don't remember myself.
I met so many people. I mean,
I'm just joking.
Things, but it's like, if I saw you face to face, I'd remember.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
But I wouldn't remember, like, just based on, we met at such and such. Like, yeah.
Hey, was that when the red beard time carried?
I go to like two or three conventions or events, like, a month. So, but it's a lot of fun. So that one was definitely different.
Yeah, I think that clip of Guardians is what sold me on it, because I've read the comics before and I wasn't a newbie to it, but I was like, all right, they've got something here. It's pretty perfect.
Yeah, no, I'm so happy that it turned out well, because it was just one of those things where just based on how different it was, it's not a superhero movie, and it's not necessarily an origin story. It's kind of the origin of how the team comes together,
right.
But you don't really know the origin of Rocket Raccoon. And there are parts of, you know, Star-Lord or Peter Quill's story that we just don't know. They're left out, you know, like the beginning and the middle, you know, how is he conceived? Who is his father? Clearly an alien. And then the middle part, you know, and then we just sort of meet him. But I love stories like that, you know, like I think that's the way. You don't need all this, you know, we don't need the origin of everything, you know, and I think if some things like Gotham prove, it's like we really don't want to know everything, because it's not always the best choice.
Don't take it, you're not a fan of that show?
I don't know what you guys think. It's been a source of disappointment for me, and I'm the biggest Batman fan on the planet.
I'm watching it just to get through it, but there's some very cringe-worthy moments on that show.
Yeah, I think the problem with it is the approach. I mean, they tried to make it like a cop procedural. And I think including Bruce Wayne was a big mistake. I think the whole thing is the approach really should have been is that the villains are the protagonists. That this was like the golden age of villains without Batman. I mean, you could kick it off with Bruce Wayne, but I feel like, you know, to me the only interesting character I find is the Penguin, because that's not who he's going to be. And, you know, and maybe even show, like, I mean, look, there's no shortage of movies where the criminals are the good guys, right?
Right.
The Godfather films, Scarface. Like, let's see this. I almost think that, like, you know, focusing on the police department, they should be the bad guys. They're the ones that ruin the good stuff. So it really should be from the point of view of the villains and their comeuppance and their kind of, you know, taking over Gotham, knowing that Batman's going to come. And, maybe they even could have done some flash forwards, you know, and some twists. I feel like it's just too narrow. And
yes,
I don't know.
I wish they didn't kill Bruce's parents. Spoiler, sorry, everybody. In the very first episode, I wish that would have been something they led up to during the first season, you know?
Yeah, I mean, like, the whole thing is the cool thing about those kind of things where, where you're telling this part of the story is, you know, twists. I mean, maybe the Waynes were assholes and kind of deserved it. They're one percenters.
Those
and they're
rich
jerks.
Assholes.
Yeah.
Yeah, rich assholes. It's kind of like, I don't know if you guys remember this, but if you've ever played the computer game, the PC game TIE Fighter.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so TIE Fighter, which is now available on, you can actually download it and play it online. But the cool thing about TIE Fighter, because I had played X-Wing, and I played all through it, played every expansion pack, B-Wing, and all that stuff. And TIE Fighter was cool because it was the same game as X-Wing, but it was the reverse. And from right. The Empire's point of view, like these rebels, they killed a bunch of people. They disrupted trade routes. They destroyed the Death Star, this magnificent weapon. They've done. I mean, it was cool. It was like, oh, this is cool. It's from the Empire's point of view, and like, you know, you'd see, like, as you'd move up the ranks in TIE Fighter, like, you'd get to meet more and more people in the Empire, and you're kind of like, this is awesome. I'm part of this big military industrial complex.
Speaking of TIE Fighters, y'all guys ever see that anime of that guy who hand drew the TIE Fighter thing?
Saw it last week. It was great. He spent 4 years working on it on weekends.
And I know, man. Well, it's crazy.
Oh, it blew me. And it just sucks that it's like, here it is. Like, it's, I don't know, what was it, like 8 minutes or something? 11 minutes?
Yeah, it was like six or 8 minutes.
Yeah, it was short, but it was so unbelievable. I mean, it's basically Starship porn, but I thought it was amazing, the approach. And
I thought it looked great, like, especially for an anime point of view.
That's what's so great about the whole universe of Star Wars is how it just inspires all kinds of creativity in people.
So before we move on to a lot of different topics, let's talk about the main reason why you're here, not because you wanted to have fun with us, which is always good. But
why could that not be the main reason?
That can't be the main reason.
This is my favorite part. Like, you have no idea. Like, I just got back from Emerald City Comic Con, and my favorite part of those conventions is I like to look at stuff, and I own a lot of stupid crap that I don't need anymore and whatever.
You should see Carrie's office.
Yes, definitely.
I know. I stopped buying stuff because, one, I don't need it, and two, I just don't need it. But like, my favorite part of the cons is just talking to like-minded nerds mm-hmm. about stuff that we're all into. You know, like that was the best part, was just going to the hotel bar, meeting other nerds, suddenly I'm best friends now with a guy. I met this guy, Dennis, who's a cop who was dressed as Venkman from the Ghostbusters.
Yeah,
so
that's awesome. Now,
yeah, so I love that kind of stuff. And then, you know, look, we met at D23. I don't exactly remember. If I met you again, I would totally remember. But like, getting into those passionate conversations, that is my favorite thing to do. I mean, that is, like, at a convention, it's my favorite thing is really just to bond with other nerds. So
let's talk about some cons for a little bit. I know you've gone to San Diego, and that's the big mother, but what are some of your other right. favorite smaller cons maybe that...
Well, there's a bunch of them. I mean, first of all, you know, San Diego Comic Con has just become a victim of its own success. It's just gotten way too big and difficult and expensive. And there are people I know that have been going for years that have finally just said, you know, with the money that it costs to go, I could go to two or three other cons. Yeah. And secondly, I can also buy a lot of stuff. So they're just not going. And people I know that have been going for years have just said, this is the year, I'm just taking a year off. And it's kind of sad. But the smaller cons I would recommend that I've been to are Phoenix Comic Con, I think, is amazing. I really love Stan Lee's Kamikaze in October, November in L.A. Dragon Con it's fantastic. That one is incredible. And then even like San Diego Comic Fest is this really tiny convention, but it's held at the same hotel resort in outside of San Diego, the Town and Country. That's where the original San Diego Comic Con took place. It's like going to a retro con.
So it's kind of like them going back to the roots kind of way?
Oh my God, it's awesome. Yeah, it is. Well, it's some of the original founders of Comic-Con that are just like, hey, it's gotten too big. Let's do a small con. They do it in October, and it's held at the same place, and it really feels like an older con, you know. It's just everything small, small dealer's rooms, small rooms to do panels, and yeah, I mean, you know, I have fun at these smaller events, and then I even like to go to things like Frankensons in Pomona, or, yeah, like, yeah, that's Pomona or City of Industry, right,
like
on the
autograph
side.
Collectible shows?
Yeah, autograph collectible shows, you know, there's, you know, so, yeah, but Phoenix, Dragon Con, Gallifrey 1 is amazing if you're a Doctor Who fan.
My wife definitely
yeah,
is.
Yeah, about to say.
You know,
yeah, but it's impossible to get tickets because they cap it at, like,
yeah.
I think it's, like, 3,000 tickets. And that's it. And they sell out within, like, an hour. They're gone. So,
you know, growing up, you know, you talked about Comic Cons, and it was like the Hilton Ballroom. That's pretty much all it was.
Yeah.
I never had a chance to do that.
Yeah, I remember going. It was like at this, was that a school or whatever? I just remember it wasn't at the convention center. It eventually made it to the convention center. Then I would have booths. I actually had a booth for Film Threat there for years because we would sell the magazine. We even did, like, autograph signing. With we had the cast of the original Roger Corman Fantastic Four at the Film Threat booth.
Nice.
And they signed copies of Film Threat that we were giving away there at the convention. I think we gave away like 2,000 copies. I mean, that's when it was only part of the convention center. There'd always be some other strange convention that was also happening at the same time.
Right.
Now that really doesn't happen much anymore. Yeah, so then I'd have booths for Film Threat, and then we would, I don't know, it's really been the last 10 years that it's gotten bad, and the last 5 years when Hollywood moved in, it's been this sort of Hollywoodification of it, and this is why the Sundance Film Festival, it's what happened to Sundance as well. It's just like these people came in that are jumping on the bandwagon of people who are the influencers that go to these things, and they market to this group, and then... I don't know. I just find it's an element that's not desired.
People say the same thing about South by Southwest.
Yeah, South by Southwest is the exact same. It's gotten just out of control.
It's all about money.
I mean, it's all, you know, first it was music, then they added film, interactive, then they added comedy and all this stuff. It's just gotten like, what is this mishmash of stuff? I don't know. And then it's a brilliant thing because the filmmakers, they show their movies. They're not getting paid. South by Southwest doesn't bring anybody in. They only give complimentary badges to the talent that comes into town. It's a great showcase, but all the performers aren't getting paid. In fact, they pay for all their travel. So it's considered an honor to be there. I mean, I've been a panelist for several years, but even as a panelist, it's so expensive to go, so expensive to travel to all these things. You don't realize, all this stuff has just gotten too big. I look for the smaller, more intimate events.
Have you ever been down here for Comic Palooza at all in Houston?
No, I haven't, but I try to go. You know, every few months I try to go to a convention I've never been to.
You should come down this year, man. We'll talk later, but I can get you in. It's
you should come down and hang out with us.
I can get you a panel. We can get whatever you need, man. We actually,
that would be fun.
We actually work for the con, so
that would be a lot of fun.
Cool. I will talk to the powers that be, and we'll get you in there, man.
Nice.
So let's talk about Film Threat. When did you first start that?
I actually started Film Threat in 1985. I actually started working on Film Threat when I was in high school because I wrote for a underground zine that was put out called The Truth, which was kind of like The Onion and did a lot of just weird, you know, stories, you know, so-called scandalous stories. So I thought, well, I want to do like some sort of punk rock fanzine, but I want it to be about film. So I came up with this logo and the name Film Threat. It just seemed to have a ring to it. It sounded punk rock. And it was my first year of college at Wayne State University. And I met up with a bunch of different like-minded film writers in my film classes. We were just all angry, as one tends to be as a young punk rock kid going to college. And I said, hey, I'm doing this zine called Film Threat. And, you know, the first issue of it, there were 500 copies, Xerox, at Kinko's, and I wrote a check that bounced. It was like, I think it was $30 to Xerox the 6-page.
That's definitely first. DIY.
Yeah, it's definitely DIY. So like, yeah, I go in, I write a check, and it bounces.
You're definitely speaking Carrie's language, because Carrie used to have his own little magazine at some point in time too.
Yeah, my start into all this heavy metal stuff was a fanzine called Mainstream Resistance, and that was like 95, 96.
Oh man, that's awesome. Yeah, so my roots are all in that, like underground. Mm-hmm. And then Film Threat kind of went through phases. There was the zine phase, which was through college, and then I got a little bit of an investment, and it ended up being like this newsprint on the inside, but then the outside has a glossy cover. Then it went from that to I splintered off. I actually moved to Los Angeles because one of the editors of Hustler magazine really liked Film Threat. And he thought that, like, oh, wow, you know, he liked the writing of it. I had done this parody in the magazine because I really, really despised this thing called the California Raisins. Do you remember
that? Yeah, I do remember that.
So I did a parody of it. Aww. I did a parody of it, like a photo shoot that was called the California Runs. And it was like this. So it was just a fumetti of this chick who's rushing to the bathroom and doesn't quite make it, and then her fecal matter comes to life and starts dancing on the toilet,
like Mr. Hankey.
Yeah, I was about to say that.
It's before Mr. Hankey.
They owe you money now.
They stole that shit from you.
Literally stole that shit from you.
Where's Matt Stone and Trey Parker? We need to get them on the phone.
No. Those guys are brilliant. it's easy to come up with some idea, but for me, execution is what's really key. That's when you really begin to recognize talent. But yeah, so one of the editors at Hustler really liked it, and I ended up selling Film Threat to Larry Flint, and he owned it for like 5-6 years. Then I got the rights back and turned it into a website. So that's the very, very, very short version. But yeah, it really started off as a fanzine and then kind of evolved. And even the website the website is always writing about, you know, just indie film people and indie film movies that you'd never, ever hear about. Film Threat is a long storied history, and anyone that used to read it, which I'll always run into when I go to conventions or whatnot, people are pretty hardcore fans when it comes to that. But all my fans are broke. I have no rich fans. All my fans are broke like me. They're all like, you know, on the lower cusp of middle class. Uh-huh. Because your obsessions require
all your money.
Your obsessions require that. I mean, like, first of all, I didn't care about stuff like doing drugs or. So I was always like, I wanted money so I could buy like
movies.
You know, model kits and go to movies. Yep. And I bought a car when I was 14 years old and fixed it up. I wanted to be able to drive the day I turned 16 so I could go to the movies.
Kindred spirit. And right here.
I used to walk to the movies.
There was one movie theater walking distance to me, but the rest of them I drove to, and I would see every movie that came out on a Friday. I would see every movie the first day it came out. So, and I had arranged my high school schedule. I could have graduated early, but I arranged my high school schedule so that I had a half day on Friday, so I would get out of school at noon. So afternoon, I would rush right to the Oakland Ball, where I'd go to the theater where I would buy one ticket. I'd see all the movies that open there because I would switch screens, as we used to be able to get away with. Not as much anymore. It's more difficult. Yeah, you can still get away with it. But like, so I would do that. And then I would go to these other theaters that would have retrospective screening, and they would show like John Waters movies or El Topo by Alejandro Jodorowsky. And I was just movie obsessed. I wanted to learn about film history. I'd go and I'd see a James Dean movie marathon, and you know, this is the days where, you know, this is like just when VCRs came around, you know, cause this is like 1983, 84. So I was just I had to see everything. I bought a VCR actually when I was like 13 years old with money from my newspaper route. and then ended up working at a video store called Thomas Video, which closed a couple years ago. And that was one of the like famous last holdouts of like video stores that would carry porn. I lied about my age. When I was 16 in high school, I actually went to Thomas Video and they said, well, you know, we have adult films here, so you have to be 18. I said, oh, I'm 18. And then I ended up working there. They finally figured it out, and they were like, oh, we don't care.
He's seen titties.
Yeah, well, it's weird because nowadays things, you know, that would be a scandal. That would be in the newspaper and there'd be some lawsuit and someone would be offended. We live in this age now where people are so offended by everything and so hypersensitive. And it's ridiculous because to me, that's just an excuse to be intolerant of other people. And I find that irritating. I find anything that excludes, that's exclusionary and where there's, you want to, I don't like that. That's always just, there's just certain things that, like, gut check piss me off. Like, you know, I don't know. I mean, having grown up on Star Trek, the ideals of Star Trek are kind of what I always, like, aspire to, or just were, like, my beliefs, because I grew up watching Star Trek when I was very little with my dad. And all of my, I believe that all my values kind of came from Star Trek, you know, like, sort of, you don't look at the world so much and with, you know, negative views about gender or race and whatnot, and, yeah, but I grew up in the Midwest, and there could be a few ignorant people there.
Did your love for film ever cause you, once you, for you, like, I want to actually make movies, or do you just wanted to be behind the scenes and, like, write about it?
Yeah, no, eventually, yeah. Like, I wanted to, you know, look, I just wanted, I knew I wanted to be a part of the process in some way, you know. Film Threat was an excuse to meet people who would have no reason to meet me. You know, David Lynch, I got to meet David Lynch and go to his house and interview him. I got to meet Gary Kurtz, the producer of the original Star Wars and The Empire Strikes Back.
Nice.
Whose contribution to those movies goes completely unnoticed.
Yes, it does.
He had a huge contribution to why those movies were as good as they were and how they changed a lot the tone of it after he wasn't involved, because he wasn't involved at all with Return of the Jedi.
It became a kids movie in Return of the Jedi.
Exactly. Then it was like, oh, this is for kids. Whereas, like, there was a good balance between it's for kids, but also for adults.
That explains a lot. That's why the prequels are so bad.
For a number of reasons. But you know, Film Threat was like, this is an excuse for me to meet people that I admire. But you know, I also, with Film Threat was sort of this thing that, like, every sort of offshoot of it was some other project, like, you know, I've written books, I've written for a lot of other magazines, and then I've produced films. I did this movie called My Big Fat Independent Movie.
I do remember that.
And I kind of do remember that, too.
Yeah, and I have some other projects that I'm working on right now, so if I can bring Film Threat back, Film Threat won't just be a website that writes about film in a new and unique, different way, but in addition, will provide content related to people's obsessions. So, I mean, I don't want to tell you exactly what all that stuff is yet, but I'm pretty excited about, like, what's in the planning stages. It's not just going to be a website that does reviews of movies. There are a lot of other websites that do that incredibly well. They'll just be different approaches in terms of what Film Threat will be doing.
My favorite is still moviepoopshoot.com, but...
Yeah, but I like, you know, it's funny because here, like, it's weird, like, because, you know, I've known Kevin Smith for years, and it's so strange, like, I wanted to make movies, he's made movies, but he also wants to do a movie website, you know, and then also have a, you know.
Just tell him to trade off is what y'all should do, just trade off one time.
We should.
Like, do like a Freaky Friday thing.
It's exactly right.
Yeah, switch brain. I don't know, I think that he and I think quite a bit alike, actually, about a lot of things, even though he probably doesn't believe that, but. But yeah, no, so I've made films and done just a lot of projects that are kind of offshoots of Film Threat.
Very cool, man.
So let's get into the Kickstarter. How did tell us about what people can do to help and what they can be offered on this Kickstarter?
Well, you can go to filmthreat.com, and filmthreat.com actually redirects you to the Kickstarter page. And the money we're asking for seems like a lot of money, but what I'm actually looking to do is bring back a robust website that is going to be like just a much bigger and grander scale. Also, there'll be a free app before the end of the year, assuming we're on schedule. There'll also be, I'm going to bring back my segment from Attack of the Show, DB Doucet. Yeah. I'm actually going to do that as a weekly web show that'll be more interactive, have links to things, so when you go to the Film Threat website, you can watch the video part of the segment, and then beneath it will be all this other info that you can interact, you can get info. There's just going to be a lot more that you'll get out of it. Because one of the fun things I always loved about doing that segment is when I would leak, you know, weird films and filmmakers onto the show, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, sure, I'd have to review the latest Transformers Blu-ray, but aside from that, you know, it would be, you know, trying to leak in some, like, Damon Packard film or some filmmaker that you should know about, or, like, a retro movie that was just being re-released through Criterion, or just a guy who sent me a movie that's selling it, you know? So that's what the DVDs would be more geared towards, a lot of the stranger stuff, along with, you know, the stuff that you'll see that's the mainstream stuff as well. So, but also the perks are pretty cool. I mean, we're doing this year is Film Threat's 30th anniversary. So 30 years Film Threat's been around. We're doing a 30th anniversary poster that is only going to the backers. And however many backers we get, that's how many posters are going to be signed and numbered. In addition, we're doing limited edition t-shirt, a hoodie, and then, there's some other perks that are like, I'll follow you on Twitter and I'll retweet anything that you want me to retweet. It's gotta be like within reason. It can't be like porn. It can't be porn or anything.
Right. You said anything. No, I was kidding.
Well, anything with the, it can't be objectionable. You know what I mean? It can't be, but you could promote your indie movie. You could promote your own Kickstarter. You could do whatever you want. Like, so I'll retweet you. Then there's, I'm doing like shout outs on the web show. And then anyone who contributes is going to get, there's going to be a page on the Film Threat site, just thanking all of those people. And then I'm doing a thing too, where the first 500 backers are going to get that contribute over $25 will get a Save Film Threat button. So we've been doing this whole campaign. If you look up hashtag Save Film Threat, you'll see all these graphics, and a lot of them are being made by fans. We kicked off and did a few of them, and then suddenly, like, all these people are making them. Like, you know, someone did one from Planet of the Apes. Someone did one from They Live, you know? Like, so all these movies, and then you'll see Save Film Threat in the background.
Nice. Yeah, one of my, not to stroke your ego or anything, but one of my favorite segments was DVD Tuesday. It was just, I look forward to
what
you reviewed every week.
Well, that's what got me kind of thinking, you know, like, you know, since Attack of the Show ended, which was like in January 2013 actually they ran it in reruns for a bunch after that. I totally forgot. Like, you know, it was still on the air for, you know, months after, 6 months or a year after. Mm-hmm. It technically ended like January 2013 because we shot a bunch of episodes that they ran through January, even though it ended. Like, we were all let go like that December. It was really depressing.
I can imagine. Christmas time?
Yeah, but I've done a bunch of other TV shows. You know, I did, like, Ultimate Film Fanatic for IFC. I did this show called Festival Pass for Stars. I was on this show called The X Show. So I've done a lot of other little cheesy cable television, but no other TV experience I've ever been involved in, people come up to me and just say, I miss Attack of the Show. I miss it. It was my habit. Like, it was on for 7.5, almost 8 years, you know.
Yeah, I watched it almost every day.
Yep.
Yeah, it was this habit that people had, and they liked it. And on DVD Tuesday, I happened to know it was one of the highest rated segments of the week. So when they looked at the ratings, like, more people turned in on Tuesdays at the end of the show because that's when DVD Tuesday was on. So it was one of the most, and I think really because, I mean, I just tried to make it entertaining, but also. It's information. It's information you can use, you know?
Sounds like our show.
A little
exactly,
bit.
Exactly.
Like, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, but no, but like useful, but at the same time, hopefully I'll make you laugh. And part of my, you know, unspoken agenda with trying to make you laugh is I'm trying to make you remember the movies I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so the best way to make you remember is to do some really cheesy joke or just something say something shocking. So that people will remember the movies I'm talking about, because I'm not a traditional movie critic by any means. And whenever anyone calls me a movie critic, I kind of cringe because, one, I don't think I'm very good at it. And secondly, it's not something I ever aspired to do or be. You know, I didn't want to be a movie critic.
Yeah.
And the guys who really call themselves movie critics are really serious people. I'm not that. I take my work seriously, but I don't take myself seriously.
Anytime I have to review something and throw it out there to the public, I always second guess myself and think, am I really good enough to do this? But you just got to push through it, you know?
Doesn't really.
Well, it's funny. I do think that there are kind of like qualities, because a lot of people would ask me, like, what do you need to be able to, you know, write about film or be a film critic? And I think that there are some qualifications. I mean, one, you have to know writing, right?
Mm-hmm.
You have to, like, know grammar, good punctuation. Sentence structure.
I speak
all
Wells.
That stuff. Yeah. You have to know that. And secondly, you have to have, like, a sense of film history. You know what I mean? You really have to have a sense of film history. So when I read someone and they say that Insurgent's the best movie they've ever seen,
oh, man.
I think maybe they haven't seen a lot of movies. So and then
or they're a teenage girl.
Well, the first thing you need, which I think almost, you know, anyone doing it is already going to have, and there's almost too much of this, is passion. So it's passion, writing skill, and a sense of film history. That those are the three things that you really are required to be able to write well about film, so that you know your opinion is worthy of being respected. But people, like, having gone to conventions, because I love going to Comic Cons and film festivals, people come up to me at every single one. It happens every 10, 15 minutes. People are, I miss DVD Tuesdays, I miss Attack of the Show, or they come up and they tell me about a specific movie or filmmaker that I introduced them to. And it was like, God, here it is. It's more than 2 years later, and people are still telling me they miss DVD Tuesday. And I thought, well, maybe I should just bring DVD Tuesday back. I could do it as a web show. I could get a studio, get some guys together to do the production, get the DVDs, watch all of them, you know, take my notes, and then do some longer web version where I could really get into certain titles, and then even have like a web presence that would support the other stuff that I always wanted to do on DVD Tuesday. Which went kind of beyond the just the stuff that was on video. I wanted to have like a web presence. So I got the rights to Film Threat back. It's kind of complicated, but a guy who used to work for me got the rights to continue doing it. He did it for 5 years, and the rights are about to revert back to me. And I thought, well, maybe I can do a Kickstarter. If people really want Film Threat to come back in like a more kick-ass editorial format, and if people want to see DVD Tuesday, this Kickstarter is the opportunity to find out if that's what people want.
Now, how did you get started at Attack of the Show?
It's actually a funny story. So I had done, as I said before, a lot of cheesy cable television. And I did a show, and I didn't want to do it. And I'd done, like, you know, if Fox News, you know, they need, like, someone to be a commentator about film, mm-hmm. I would pop up as a person to talk to. Well, this guy, Gavin Purcell, a producer, contacted me from National Enquirer TV.
National Enquirer TV.
Yeah, National Enquirer TV was a show, and I said, I don't want to do it. No, thank you. And he said, no, come on. You know, you're going to talk about movies, and it'll be fun and whatever. So he came to my house in Pasadena, did this interview with me, and I met Gavin, and he was really cool and great. So I was on a segment from National Enquirer TV, never saw it. He, you know, went off, and years later, I get a call from this guy, Gavin Purcell, and he's doing this show called Screensavers, which had just changed, and the network had changed its name from Tech TV mm-hmm. to G4 TV, right?
I remember that.
And I watched Screensavers, and I watched X-Play, and I loved it. It was like, oh my God, this is the channel for me. And the reason was this. For the most part, people you see on television have no idea what the fuck they're talking about. Most people that are on television, Fox made an entire news channel. Most of the people you see on CNN, most of the people don't know what they're talking about. They'll bring in these so-called experts, but even those experts have credibility that's suspicious. Most of, you know, some of these, this person is a Republican strategist. That person is a P.O. box in Galveston, Texas. They don't have any credibility. And anyone can call themselves a political strategist. So I was just sort of disgusted with all of TV. And I'm starting watching this Tech TV, and I'm thinking, like, oh, my God, this Morgan Webb. she's the real deal. You know, this guy, Adam Sessler, knows what he's talking about. Kevin Rose, this guy's incredible.
I haven't heard that name in a long time.
So it was amazing. And here's the funny thing about those people, and Kevin Pereira in particular.
Yes.
Kevin Pereira was an intern. And almost everyone, Morgan Webb, she was the girl that ran the chat. And they thrust her in front of the camera. But what was cool is most of the people that were at G4 didn't have TV experience. They had experience and expertise in the subjects in which they spoke about. So I remember watching the channel, and as soon as I got this call from Gavin Purcell, I was like, I'm really interested in doing that. I would love to be on the Screensavers and talk about movies. So Gavin brings me in to this meeting, and I didn't have to audition. And it was weird because I'd done so much TV that it's like people would call me up because they already knew, like they could just see tape of me. Like I didn't have to, I never wanted to be on TV, right? It was something I fell into as like a fluke because someone thought my writing was funny. So Gavin brings me in and he just says, look, I'm just offering you this job. I've seen your work. You did that thing for National Enquirer TV for me. I'm just offering you the job. Do you think you could do this DVD segment? It's every Tuesday and it's about 5-10 minutes long. We'll bring you in. I said, yes, I have three demands because I had some bad experiences in television. And experiences where I was trying to be molded into, like, we're going to make you hip. We're going to make you cool. We're going to have you wear this. We need to have you come in and do wardrobe tests. We're going to take you to a camp where you can learn how to be better on TV. And I was like, I don't care about being better on TV because I never wanted to be on TV. So I told Gavin, I said, look, I said, I want to be able to, I have three demands. One, I want to be able to be myself on camera. I want to just be who I am. Don't try to tell me who to be or how to be or hit me up or whatever. I want to be who I am and wear what I want, right? So I want to be able to just, you know, be myself on camera. Number two, I want to be able to say what I want. So within reason, I know I can't swear, but I got away with some really cool things on Attack of the Show. I'll tell you about that after. These are some Easter eggs. So I want to be able to say what I want within reason. And secondly, and the thirdly, the third request was I want to be able to keep all the DVDs. So he said, look, you can totally be yourself and wear whatever clothes you want to wear. Because I had some experiences in TV where they always wanted me to, like, wear this clothes and that clothes. I didn't like it. He said, you can definitely say whatever you want. You know, just give notes to a producer and, you know, just, you know, so what you're basically going to say. Just obviously no swearing. But he said, but I can't let you keep all the DVDs. Because we need them for the library at G4.
Oh.
Like, oh, man, fuck. So, all right, fine. So I obviously took the job, and I did three episodes of the Screensavers. And before I did it, Gavin took me aside, and he goes, you know, I want to fill you in on something. The name of the show is going to change, and you can't tell anybody. It's going to be called Attack of the Show. And I thought it was the dumbest name I'd ever heard. Now, this is a stupid. I said, whatever. As long as the people are the same and the show's the same format, it's going to be pretty much the same format. We're going to change a few things, but it's going to be called Attack of the Show. So I was on three episodes of the Screensavers. Then it was changed to Attack of the Show. And then I was on, you know, every Tuesday starting. It was like March of 2005 is when I started. And the last thing I did was in December of 2012. The last thing I taped. Even though that they ran stuff throughout 2013, but it was weird. You know, it was the best experience I ever had in television because I got to be myself, and it was not only most satisfying. I would get the most positive feedback. So I think you know when my other TV experiences were like, oh, I feel like a jerk. I feel like they're making me into a TV douchebag. You know, like I can do that on my own. I don't need any help. But it's funny because what I would do is, I actually wore this one t-shirt that I got in a fight with the lawyers because I would come up with these really creative ways of getting around being able to say whatever I want. And I had this shirt, this t-shirt that was from a band that I loved called Get Set Go. And they have a song called I Love Your Vagina. So this t-shirt had a heart on it. It said, I love your vagina. And they said, you can't wear that on TV. I said, why? Vagina's not a bad word. Vagina's a medical term.
It's a technical term.
It is a medical term.
It's a medical term. a medical term. They were going to put a piece of big, you know, gaffer tape on it. I said, I'm not taking it off. I'm wearing it. And they said, they went through all this stuff. And it's like minutes before the show, it's like, all right, you can wear this shirt. Which ended up being kind of a funny thing. I think I wore it like every Valentine's Day on the show whenever I could. I would wear that shirt. I love that shirt. But and then the other thing that I would do is I would swear in American Sign Language on the show. So what would happen is they would come in like, oh, welcome to the show. Whatever co-host they team me up with would kind of intro me and the camera would be coming down. And I would just do some stuff with my hands. And I was always signing swear words and weird shit. So I got away with a lot of stuff just under the radar. And the other thing I found out from one of the lawyers is that I said, can I mispronounce a swear word? So I actually said this director was a total shafid. And I was able to get away with that. So it was, and the cool thing was, is being able to do that. Like how cool of the show to not fire me. That was my main thing. First of all, I couldn't believe I lasted that long. I mean, people were, you know, leaving or getting fired left and right. I thought I was on the chopping block for sure, but I'm sure they thought that about everybody. It was sort of miserable. The last year was miserable because we kind of knew actually it was the last 2 years was miserable because we kind of had this feeling that we were going to be shut down. But, I don't know, it was the best experience I ever had in TV. And Gavin Purcell, by the way, about 3 years into doing Attack of the Show, he got snapped up by Jimmy Fallon. Jimmy Fallon hired him, and now he's the producer of the Jimmy Fallon Show.
Oh, that's nice. Cool.
I love watching the show.
I don't know if you do that. So, yeah, so that's kind of how I got involved in Attack. I've never worked on something in television where people just don't want to let it go. I'm a little surprised my Kickstarter is not further ahead. It's kind of disappointing. Like if people really want it, I'm telling them about it, but it's not turning into people giving me $25. I guess it's one of those things with anything on the internet. People want stuff, but you ask them to pay for it.
Right. It's like, what pay?
When it comes to real life, come on, guys.
Yeah, I mean, support, I'm just trying to say, look, the benefit is you get this thing that you love back. You'll actually be able to be an active participant in the show because you helped make it happen. And secondly, you know, you'll get some benefits and rewards. So in a way, it's kind of like a pre-purchase of a T-shirt or the pre-purchase of a poster that will have value. And on the higher rewards, you know, you'll be able to be on the show. And I'll also be giving away some, like, incredible, weird, like, exclusives I have that I know are worth a lot of money. You can just turn it around and sell it on eBay. Stuff from when I worked at G4, like signed scripts and stuff. So I've got like all this amazing stuff. And these are things I'm just going to be giving to the backers that put in the larger dollar amounts. So everyone's going to get their value. Like when whatever you're paying for, you get a thing, you get something. You know, everything from, you can kind of pick shout out, a retweet, a follow, a this, like all of them have some kind of value. But I do wish it was a little further along. But I shouldn't compare myself to like some of these other campaigns I see that like get $2 million in the first 14 hours. And then it's like, I'm sitting here, I'm just trying to do my thing, you know?
So speaking about some of the, you said you were on the show for a long time. You said a lot of people came and went on that show. What was your favorite era of Attack of the Show?
I think it was when Olivia was on. I really think that she was as much as
she was. Of course, it had to be Olivia.
Of course,
no, it does have to be.
As much as there was like craziness, what I loved about working with her is she was completely unpredictable. You know, she was a completely unpredictable force of nature. You know, on that show, I mean, you know, she would. I mean, you just never knew. It would just crazy stuff would happen, and she would get away with stuff. Because she was frickin' Olivia Munn, you know?
Of course.
Who's going to say no to her? So that was probably my favorite era. I mean, I know it wasn't easy on a lot of other people who worked with her, but I will say that, like, I think that's when the show was really in its groove. And in my opinion, they really should have fought to keep her as long as possible. She was just really didn't want her to be – it's weird because I look on it and it's just like, you know, because the show would do a lot of skits. and stuff, and they do a lot of, like, you know, sketches where they would go and film something. And it's funny because Kevin Pereira was, he was born to be on television, that guy. He's just a natural.
He was.
You know, like, he was born to be on TV. He's born to be funny. Most quickest wit of anyone I've ever met in my life. Where sometimes I'm doing the show with him and I'd have to, like, I end up just watching him because he's so funny. It's just funny as hell. But he's not a great actor. He would even say that. However, conversely, Olivia Munn was an actress.
Mm-hmm.
She could cry on cue. She could pretend she was mad, but she really wasn't angry. And she was an amazing, I mean, like, flawless, unbelievable, just like working her ass off actress who was pretending to be a TV host.
Hmm.
Right? Like, her TV hosting was like something that she had to kind of figure out, you know? Mm-hmm. And so the two of them had these kind of opposite talents, and I think they complemented each other quite a bit.
I was about to say, that's probably why it works so well.
I think that's why it works so well.
Track is Paula,
but, look, I'm not the one that's there all day rehearsing, reading scripts, going out, shooting segments. You know, I'd come in on Tuesday and say, hey, how's it going, guys? And occasionally, you know, they had me, I did guest host. Like, there'd be like a week here and there where I would guest host the show. And that's a grind, man. That is a grind. That live TV every day mm-hmm. is a grind. But, I'd say Kevin Olivia was the best era. Although, I will say that I did like when they were like, I don't know that they should have ever gotten a permanent co-host for Kevin. I liked when they had the recurring host. I thought that worked. It was sort of like the chat roulette of hosts, you know?
You'd
see a different one every day.
Is that when Olivia left?
What's that?
Was that when Olivia left?
Yeah, when Olivia left, they just sort of, they had like a period. It was like almost, it felt like it was a year because it was a long time. Because she was in and out, and then they would bring in these guests, and then they would host for a week and be gone and stuff like that. And I thought that was cool. It was like, oh, you know, you never know who's going to show up. Sometimes it was some crazy actress. Sometimes it was some up-and-coming, you know, hosting talent. But hosting, for the most part, is dead as a required job in terms of, like, you know, that arena for geek stuff. All that stuff has gone on the internet, which really doesn't pay anything. And there isn't a show, Attack of the Show doesn't exist. And a lot of shows these days, they just go, you know, what they call hostless. You know, it's basically a disembodied voiceover that walks you through the show. You know, it's a hostless show, and that's become popular. And whatever, that's a way to do it. But more than anything, I miss Kevin. I think that Kevin was born to do TV. I think his opinions were amazing. His passion for politics and for good causes was great. He was an amazing host because he never made it about himself. It was always, you know, like he made his job was to make other people look good, and I appreciated that. So of all the people I've ever worked with in television, Kevin Pereira is the best person.
I'm trying to remember where he got his start, like one of the game shows on the network, right?
Yeah, on Arena, he was like
Arena,
an intern, and then they had him.
Is that the BattleBots?
Yeah, and then they had him host every once in a while, and he's just a natural. He's just a guy that, like, it just goes to show you, you know, you can do all this stupid training, but it's like, you know, I think a lot of it comes, did you entertain your family around the dinner table? That's where you got your hosting experience. And I feel like that was part of Kevin. I mean, I've never met, I mean, like, he has this bundle of energy, like he does meth and like he does drugs. And I do know that he does imbibe in some recently made legal drugs. wonder what that is. But, you know, he talks about it quite frequently on his podcast, Pointless. But he's just this energy that is amazing. And I always saw it as just like, wow, like you're gonna be doing TV hosting, and then you're gonna run for Congress and do something interesting.
I would vote for him.
Yeah, I would vote for him. But like, just from the sidelines, I don't know. Kevin was just, yeah. And after this, I will completely blow him. No, it's but it's cool because I wish he was doing more. You know, the podcast is cool, but I want to just have I feel like I know what it was like. You know, for Kevin, I mean, I got to come on 5 minutes a day and kind of just be unrestrained and unscripted. Kevin had to, like, do scripting, and then he had to do an interview, then he had to talk to this, then he had to do this. And it's like, then there would be the few minutes every episode where Kevin could go off script and be Kevin.
Right.
And that was the best part of Attack of the Show. The best part of Attack of the Show is when something went wrong,
exactly.
when something went badly, when something wasn't supposed to happen, and it happened. You know, when something like, I don't know, you know, just like when just weird mistakes would happen that would turn into jokes the next day, and there'd be like thousands of tweets about those jokes. You know, or about that thing that happened.
That was one of the best parts of the show because it wasn't like, oh, we fucked up. It was more of they embraced it, you know?
Yeah, and embracing all the mistakes. So, yeah. Like
it's live TV for you.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, but that was a cool part of it. So, I don't know. I just, I missed that. I think it was definitely kind of a magical time in that period. So, you know. If I could just bring back DVD Tuesday, just to do that every week, and just to sort of get that same group of fans to come out, you know, when however many thousands, I hope, of people that just want to, like, you know what, go to filmthreat.com once a week, it'll be posted at a certain time every week. There will be the new episode, and it'll just begin a new conversation. Then there'll be all sorts of other stuff to read on Film Threat. I mean, I hope I can make that happen. That's my goal.
Well,
you know, unfortunately, to do something like that is expensive. I mean,
yes.
I was telling a friend of mine who works in tech, like, what I'm doing, and he said, that usually costs about $500,000. But I know how to do stuff low budget, so it's going to feel like a real thing, you know?
We would like to indulge you and bring back the segment on the show right now.
Ooh.
Really?
Would yeah, you like well, to?
Tomorrow right. is Tuesday.
All right, let's do it. Okay, you ready?
I'm totally
ready.
You want to
talk about some DVD?
Let's do it.
All right, cool. Okay, let me give you a DVD recommendation. This would be like one of those things where, you know, at the end, there were a couple different things. I do the segment, DVD Tuesday, then I would do a quick pick at the end.
Right.
Sometimes I do a rapid fire. So this isn't really on video, but I'll tell you about something that I just picked up on DVD. It's, and you guys have to look this up. It's amazing.
Will do.
It's a four-disc DVD set of a television show from 1973 called Star Lost.
Star Lost.
Star Lost. Star Lost.
Okay.
One word, the Star Lost. Okay. It's created by a guy named Cordwainer Bird. Cordwainer Bird is a pseudonym for Harlan Ellison.
Oh.
And if you know who Harlan Ellison is, he is a science fiction writer who basically wrote the plot for Terminator, who also wrote the best episode, what is arguably the best episode of Star Trek, the series, City on the Edge of Forever, and countless science fiction short stories and novels. And so he created this show, but he was so upset with how it turned out, he took his name off of it.
Hmm.
Now this show is it's a Canadian science fiction show set thousands of years in the future where Earth no longer exists. But there's a giant spaceship called the Ark. And on the Ark are all these domed cities. And in each domed city is a completely different culture. So the characters that you see that escape the dome are living in what's basically an Amish culture, right? And Cara Delevingne, who was in 2001 A Space Odyssey, is the lead character, right? And he escapes the dome along with two companions, and they end up exploring the other domes on the ship and quickly find out that the Ark is off course. Not only is it off course, there's an explosion, they're leaking fuel, and it's headed straight toward the sun. So if they don't solve this issue, everyone on the Ark is going to die.
Oh,
and
no.
The Ark is like hundreds of miles long. I mean, it's a giant starship that was built to, it's sort of a Noah's Ark, basically, for Earth. The effects are pretty cheesy, but it was executive produced by Douglas Trumbull, who did effects for 2001 A Space Odyssey.
Huh.
So it's kind of an artifact for its time. And a lot of like there's like cameos in it, like John Colicos is in it from Battlestar Galactica and Star Trek. Walter Koenig does two episodes as an alien called Oro. Oro, the word for gold. He wears a gold lamé pantsuit. And then
'70s.
It's really funny because it's like it's really set in its era. It's cheesy. But the writing is really good. The writing are basically ex-Star Trek people. Ursula K. Le Guin, if you know who that is, this novelist who's done, she did The Lathe of Heaven. She writes an episode of the show. So it really is like an artifact from a period, and I found it's I ordered the Canadian DVD, and it's just fantastic. They're the same region code as the United States. You can buy Canadian DVDs. It's not a big deal, but you can find episodes of Star Lost on YouTube. So I highly recommend just Google Star Lost. There are 18 episodes, but only 16 actually exist because there are two actually oddly enough lost episodes.
Star Lost.
You'll find all 16 episodes on YouTube, but you can also get the DVD, which has very little extras, but the quality of the transfer is way better. But it's fun and cheesy. It's like that era of, like, you know, Doctor Who, when they would, you know, be shot on video indoors and then you go outdoors and it was shot on 16mm film, which I always found to be odd. Yeah. But yeah, Star Lost. So that's like just an example of one of the things that I would talk about. Now, of course, while I'm talking about it on A New DVD Tuesday, you'd actually see the video, you know, so you'd see me talking about it, and you'd see scenes from it, you'd see a few extended scenes, and then you'd have links where you could find everything.
Now we just have to close our eyes until that comes out.
Just
we have
imagine it right now.
Yeah, exactly. So now you've just gotten the audio version of
it's the audio commentary
the DVD Tuesday. Yeah, no, that would be like an example of one of the things that I would discuss. Because I do tend to, like, I like to find, like, the weird, crazy, cannot believe it exists kind of thing. And also, I would even talk about on the show, like, you know, weird stuff on, like, Netflix and Hulu that you might not know. Yeah, like, hey, you know, because that's something we talked about at the end of Attack of the Show. I wanted to do a segment called 3D DVD Tuesday, where it would be reviewing 3D movies. Hmm. But, like, we'd only do it, like, once, you know, like, every other month.
So are you going to start doing
thankfully 3D is really kind of dead. And then also do like streaming choices, like, you know, what cool stuff is on Netflix that to dig deep, you know, like and then actually show scenes from it. So there's a lot of potential. Like, there were a lot of ideas we discussed in evolving the DVD Tuesday segment on Attack of the Show, things I never got to do. Now I can just do them, you know, and now I can see, well, what is the audience like? Does the audience like rapid fire every week? Do they like this particular segment? And typical, you know, it'll be viewable on YouTube, so you can, like, you know, you can just go to the segment that you want to watch. But what I really want to do is develop an entire show so that it wouldn't just be a DVD Tuesday segment, but it would be like a 20-minute show every week that's would be more extended, where I bring in, like, directors and filmmakers and actors, and we talk about their movies and then also get like a round table of comedians and movie critics and creators and talk about, you know, bigger topics like the Marvel Universe and future of Star Wars, future of independent film festivals, stuff like that. Like, there's a lot of potential, a lot of stuff, but doing a show like that isn't cheap. So,
of course.
Yeah.
So this week there's a bunch of new releases. Let's talk about some DVDs and Blu-rays that are out. I have not seen Interstellar yet. I know my co-host
I saw it twice.
What is your opinion on that movie?
I saw it four times in the theater, and it's incredibly flawed. But in terms of a visceral experience, you know, it's more coherent than something like 2001: A Space Odyssey. It definitely owes a lot to that movie. And I'm in two places with it. Like, I love that it's like it uses real science. I love how ambitious it is. It fails on many levels just because it just way tries to hammer home the, you know, the relationship between, you know, the father and the daughter. That's just a little, you know, I feel like it's like, yeah, a little too hokey. I don't know that needed to do it that much. Nolan's been accused of some of his movies being a little cold, and I don't agree. I just don't think he needs to be so obvious. But as a visceral experience, you know, I thought it was amazing. That's why I went to see it. You know,
did you see it in 35mm?
I saw it definitely in 70mm IMAX.
Okay, cool. Nice.
To be at a theater to see it in 70mm. So
I did see it in 70mm as well.
I pre-ordered the Blu-ray, so it's arriving tomorrow.
Did you hear about how they supposedly had a darker ending?
Yeah, I did read an article about the original script for the movie. I do think the ending, I almost feel like it's like, you know, that movie and AI, if you just cut out the last part, I think it's fine. I think it would have been better if he saved his daughter. She never knew about it. I just didn't understand why she was so bitter and angry at him for leaving. He was leaving to try and save her. Why are you so pissed off? I'm trying to save you. I'm not leaving to leave you. I'm leaving to do something for the good of all mankind. So for the daughter to hold that kind of anger the whole time makes no sense.
Teenagers. You know? That's all I think it is. It's teenagers.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. I actually happen to... I think the good of that movie outweighs the flaws, and I really enjoy it. And I, like I said, I already bought it. It's arriving tomorrow. So what does that tell you?
I'm buying mine tomorrow, so...
It comes out tomorrow, cool. Correct.
Yes.
I'm borrowing your copy then.
There you go. You can borrow my copy.
There you go. Cool.
Let's talk about... Did you see Into the Woods?
Yes, I did.
I did not.
I have not. Is that all we need to know about it?
That's not one I'll buy, but, you know, I am, I do like the intent of it. I thought the music worked. I also like, one thing I did like about it, it's incredibly dark. That's really? Not for kids.
So Carrie got a little bit more interested now.
And I was like, I like dark movies that are done by Disney.
Definitely not for children. And the ending of it is really messed up. I mean, it's definitely a flip on everything fairy tale, you know. But I thought it was great. For me, that's like a rental, not a buy. Oh, wow, we're actually doing, yes.
Exactly.
Rent.
See what we did here?
It's a buy for Interstellar. It's a rent for Into the Woods. And I don't know. I don't know. If you're going to ask me about something Adam Sandler, I'm going to say it's a pass.
Oh, no, we're not. Okay, let's talk about the Pixels preview. No, we're not. We're not even going to go there.
I saw it. I don't know what you guys thought, but I...
It looks okay. Like, I'll check it out just because Peter Dinklage is in it.
Well, here's the thing. The effects look really cool, but at the end of the day, it's an Adam Sandler movie that's a ripoff of Ghostbusters, and I just can't buy him as that. I just think that he just lacks a... I don't know, you know? And I almost kind of like that movie he made, the one where he thought he had cancer and he was the comedian, but you know, that was another Judd Apatow thing where it was like the movie was, you know, 40 minutes longer than it should have been. But
like all the
Pixels, it's one of those ones where I am not going to the theater to see that movie.
Nope.
I'll see it when it is available on Netflix for nothing.
Exactly.
Well, they have like a deal with him to like make a whole bunch of his movies just for Netflix, don't they?
Yeah, his movies definitely have a certain audience. I'm not that audience. I almost feel like it's not fair for me to judge an Adam Sandler movie. I'm not the person he's making it for.
It's low-hanging fruit is what it is.
Yeah, it's sort of like the Ernest movies. Those were not for me either. You know, the sense of humor. And it's you know, yeah, I think that that's a fair... I'm not trying to cop out. I'm just saying that, like, I don't like him, so the best person to judge an Adam Sandler movie would be an Adam Sandler fan,
right,
of which I am not.
So one more movie on our DVD Tuesday, it's The Imitation Game.
Oh, yeah. No, I thought that was amazing. Benedict Cumberbatch. He was, I personally loved it. I think Imitation Game is one of those films that falls into a category for me. After I've seen the movie, it makes me want to see a documentary about the subject of the movie.
Right.
I know what the real facts are, because I know they played fast and loose with the facts. I love the idea that this thing is about making a computer, and the fact that it's like, this was also something that, you know, was kept secret for years, you know, decades. I mean, it only came out recently that this thing, this program existed, and that's how, you know, that's how the Allies were able to win World War II. You know, it was by basically keeping a secret that they even knew what the messages were. So, you know, I think the subject is fascinating. I just think that I'd almost rather see the documentary. That's another, like, rent for me. You know, I don't know that it would hold up on the second viewing, but I did really enjoy it. And Cumberbatch he's the real deal. I can't wait to see him as Doctor Strange.
Yeah, me too.
I am looking forward to that. Let's get into some movie news that we got you on here. So this is something my co-host pulled up for me tonight. Adam McKay, who is the director of the Anchorman movies, is supposedly in talks to direct a Marvel movie.
Ooh, I wonder what one.
I don't know.
Well, supposedly he helped write Ant-Man, and everyone.
Well, he did the punch up, and he changed the script changes.
And everyone thought he was going to direct that one, but apparently they told him no, so he might be doing something else.
Can you imagine a Doctor Strange movie?
No clue what it could be. For me, those rumors. I mean, you can throw that stuff around, but it's like until there's a press release and it's official. I mean, I would speculate something like the Ms. Marvel movie, the Captain Marvel movie. That could be interesting, because that's something that's a completely different.
And supposedly they already casted that movie recently, too.
Yeah, so I don't know. And I don't know, what are the Marvel movies that are left, right?
I mean,
there's a handful. There's Black Panther. There's Captain Marvel. I mean, there's a lot, so.
Guardians 3 or something.
No, I think that's James Gunn's world. I really think that they're not going to... I mean, if they are going to do a Guardians 3, I actually think in a way that, Infinity Wars Part 1 is going to be Guardians 3.
Exactly right.
The Guardians of the Galaxy are going to be in Infinity Wars. Does anyone doubt that?
No, I don't doubt that at all.
I mean, I really think that actually everyone is going to be in Infinity Wars because... It's going to be, I think you're going to see Daredevil, from Netflix. You're going to see every character in the Marvel Universe is going to have some cameo.
Even Spider-Man.
And Infinity Wars is going to be like the Marvel Universe movie.
That's
really not so much an Avengers
movie. That's how it should be slated, not Infinity Wars. It should just be called Marvel Universe movie.
It's just a young geek's dream come true.
Yeah, exactly. Like stuff that you never thought you would see. I always get whenever I go to any of the Marvel movies in the theater and I see that little flippy logo at the beginning with that music.
Yep.
I always get I get chills down my spine because I never thought as a kid reading these comics that I'd actually physically get to see these people on the screen. I never thought that.
We are in a geek's paradise right now.
Yeah, no, it totally is with like Star Wars coming back, and there's some things I wish weren't coming back. I think the new Terminator looks pretty bad. I mean, it looks like a Sci-Fi Channel movie, and I like those Sci-Fi Channel movies for what they are, but it looks like it looks like people cosplaying Terminator.
Terminator versus Sharknado is next.
Arnold.
I hadn't heard that rumor, but Adam McKay is eminently qualified. I mean, I love what he did with the other guys. I think that's a stroke of brilliance.
That was a funny-ass movie.
One of the best.
End credit sequences for a movie in a long time because he just lays out all this financial bullshit. But
I think my favorite part in that movie is when Samuel Jackson and The Rock jump out the window.
Oh, yeah, it makes no sense. It's awesome. But that was pretty cool.
So Hugh Jackman is basically teasing that the next Wolverine movie, the sequel to The Wolverine, will be his last role as Wolverine.
It's an end of an era.
Even though he said that he would play Wolverine until he dies.
Right.
Maybe he's dying.
Maybe that's possible.
No, I don't wish that on Hugh Jackman.
No.
Although Les Miserables was,
miserable.
Well, he wasn't miserable in it. Russell Crowe was miserable in it.
I took my grandmother to see that movie in the theater. Show them.
It's about time. He can only look 35 for so many years. But he created that character with, he wasn't the first choice, and he got the role, and he's fantastic. I mean, he's the glue that's kept all the X-Men movies together. Although I hate to say this, my favorite X-Men movie is the one where he really is in one scene, and that's X-Men First Class. I love that film.
Yeah, me too.
I love that movie.
I was hoping the sequel would be just as good, but...
You mean the mismatch that we had?
Yeah.
I don't know what the Days of Future Past was all about. That was strange. But I like his role. I mean, he's in the movie once and he gets to say fuck off. I mean, that was amazing.
It's the best line ever.
Are you looking forward to Apocalypse Now?
I'm definitely looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to all this stuff. Like, I'm not the one that sort of sits there and obsesses over like all the shit that people write. It's like all this stuff, speculation, whatever. It's fanboy bullshit. There are a few websites I go to that, will have kind of the real info. But even then, it's like, wait until I like to be surprised in the theater. You know, I think too much of that. You know,
that's what I did with Interstellar when it came out. I avoided every single trailer possible.
Yeah,
to be more of a surprise.
It's more fun to see movies that way, isn't it? You know, it's the experience of when I go to see a movie at a film festival, and all I have to go on is a description and a program guide, and I have no idea what the movie's even really about, because sometimes the descriptions are really poorly written. So, and the movie's marketing isn't there yet. The problem is that the marketing is as much of an experience of going to a movie now as the movie.
Yes. Yep.
And that wasn't the case. It was just like, well, there's a movie opening and it's called Star Wars. What's it about? I don't know. Celebrities fighting. You know, it's about celebrities fighting.
People now are all over the internet are already trying to spoil Star Wars, and it's like, don't do it. I mean,
oh yeah, I'm just keeping my ears closed to that stuff.
Well, I do think they're going to change some stuff too. I mean, I'm told internally that like what you're reading were like earlier drafts of the script, and things are changing now, and they're building towards this is a trilogy. They're going to be telling the trilogy story with new characters, and you're going to see, you know what, they're going to be Star Wars movies. It's just going to be like Marvel movies. There'll be spin-offs, then there'll be a trilogy about this character, then there'll be like the sort of main Star Wars chapter, then there'll be like standalone films, and if the standalone film is successful, believe me, we're going to see Rogue 2.
Oh, yeah. Rogue 2.
Rogue 2.
So,
I'm not joking.
I know you're not joking.
We've discussed this on the show before, but with all the Marvel movies coming out and all the DC movies that are playing, then all the Star Wars now, do you think when are we going to have an oversaturation? Enough is enough?
I think we're in oversaturation. The problem is I don't think we mind. So the thing is we already are living in the age of oversaturation of Marvel, DC, Star Wars franchises being rebooted. It's here. The problem is this. We're so good at consuming pop culture that it doesn't bother us as much. You know? It's like, how often, like look at it, you know, Avatar, like, the number one movie box office of all time, and it left, like, almost, like, no imprint, no footprint in terms of pop culture. You know, it's over. So,
yeah.
It kind of came and went.
Don't tell Disney World
more
that.
Avatar, there's more going to be more Avatar movies, and I'll bet they're going to be pretty good. But the thing is this, we consume this stuff because we're media junkies. I'm speaking about myself, of course, but I know a lot of other people are. We're just, you know, we've got devices now. We can watch on our TV. We can, you know, I mean, it's just like it's at the theater, boom. It's 3 months later, it's on DVD. It's like, you know, I think that we're just better at consuming this stuff. So we already live in oversaturation. It's just that now we can take it.
I remember a time where movies will go in the movie theater and then, like, you would have to wait 6 to 8 months for it to even come out on VHS, so.
Now, well, I remember when it would be, like, over a year.
Over a year.
To milk it,
now if it's, like, you know? Over 3 months, that's a long time.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you're like, hey, I forgot about that movie.
Well, it used to, yeah, there was, like, a whole traditional thing of, like, you know, first it was, you know, television. First it was, you know, the theater and then television and then cable and then it was, like, you know, video and home video, and it was like this whole, like, it took like a year, you know, a couple years for a movie to fully come out on all formats, you know, in all places.
Now we have VOD, we have movies coming out the same day that are in the theater.
Before they even come out in the theater.
Before they even come out in the theater, exactly right.
Well, exactly, yeah, well, that's those, you know, a lot of those indie movies, that's how they're able to survive now. So,
speaking of indie
movies. I think we live in a great time, like, I'm not complaining, like, I think this is awesome, like, It's that give me it now kind of thing. Mm-hmm. I do believe that it's going to get to a point where you'll have a choice. For example, the new Star Wars movie will come out, and you can watch it at home on VOD the same day it's in theaters, but it's going to cost you $125.
Eesh.
Now, you can invite over all your friends, and you all split it, and it ends up maybe costing the same $15 or $20 a pop is what you would pay if you went to the theater. But I believe we're going to get to a place where you can buy it every format the same day. The pricing will be different based on, you know, your movie theater ticket will be $15 to $25. Your, you know, pay at home, watch it. You get to watch it as many times as you want in like a 48-hour period, but that's going to cost you $125. You know what I mean? Like, you'll just be, and the DVD will still be available. You can walk out of the theater and there'll be a display and you can buy the movie that you just went to the theater to see on the big screen. You can now buy the Blu-ray in the lobby. They've got a display there. But the lobby, because it was same day, you're getting the day one edition of Star Wars Episode 7, The Force Awakens. You're getting the day one Blu-ray edition, which has something extra on it, and it's $75. Yeah. Or $100, right?
Right. I mean, yeah, you're onto something there.
It's going to happen.
They do it with video games. You know,
Harvey Weinstein's ears are burning right about now. That's what's going
on. Well, I mean, it's also like, you know, the turnaround of money. Like, why not? You know, like, who cares? And also because people BitTorrent and bootleg that shit anyway. Mm-hmm. I mean, why not, like, have it all come out in one day in all formats? One day, all formats, different, but the pricing has got to be, what are people willing to pay? And it's kind of come down, you know, VOD is like $20, you know, $15 to $20, you know. So it's all just, the pricing is kind of a, you know, they're going to have to figure out what the pricing is. But I believe that when we get to, you know, the third Star Wars movie, you're going to be able to buy it the same day.
Do you still enjoy the movie going experience, actually going to a theater and everything?
Are you kidding? Still, I moved, the place that I moved to in Pasadena is three blocks from the Arclight Cinemas, which is one of the best movie theater chains in Southern California.
I went to the Cinerama Dome last year when I was there.
Yeah, so you know that's the Arclight, right?
Mm-hmm,
so
yes.
I don't live close to that one. I live close to a different one in Pasadena. But I'm three blocks away. I walk up to the movies once a week. I'm a member, and you know I go to the retrospective screenings. And are you kidding me? But also I don't like – well, here's what I don't like. I love going to see the movies the first day they open, or you know, the Thursday at 8 p.m. screening or whatever it is. But you know what I don't like to do? I don't like to go to critics' screenings.
Because why
it's
is
the
that?
Same group of angry, curmudgeonly – you know, can find a lack of joy in the most joyful movie experience type of person. I'm not that. I'm still enthusiastic, passionate, and optimistic. And so I don't really like, that's the one thing I don't like. I don't like critic screening.
Did you get a chance to go to South by Southwest this year?
What's that?
Did you go to South by Southwest this year?
No, I didn't.
Oh, I saw an independent movie there. Not a lot of people know about it, called Turbo Kid. Have you heard about it? It's a Canadian wasteland movie, and it takes place in the near future of 1997.
That's funny.
Near.
And it's basically like if you take Mad Max and all your favorite like 80s kid.
Hello?
Yeah,
are you here?
Oh, yeah, sorry, you went out for a second.
Oh, sorry about that. So basically, Turbo Kid is like this 80s wasteland, Mad Max meets all your favorite 80s kids movies. So if you like, do you remember that old 80s movies, BMXers, I think it was called?
Oh, right. Yeah, I think I've seen a trailer for this.
Yeah, yeah. I had a chance to see, I had no idea what it was or what it was about. I just heard it from word of mouth, and I went to go see it at South by Southwest, and it was my favorite movie there.
Wow. That's awesome.
So if you get a chance, I recommend you to watch that movie.
And you were talking about all this Marvel stuff. I was thinking, you know, we're less than a month away from Age of Ultron already.
Yeah, I know.
Right.
So
we hear echoes in the background.
And my wife's a Joss Whedon fangirl to the nth degree over here. So, when are you going to be able to see? Are you going to a sneak or anything like
that? I mean, I could go to one if I asked. But here's the thing is, like, again, it's another case of I'll be in a critic screening. The same people will be there. We'll all talk about it after. They'll find every flaw with it. I can't tell you how many times I've gone to a movie that has been where I really loved it and had a good time, walked out, and then I talked to, like, 5 or 10 of my colleagues who see movies for a living, and they just suck all the joy out of it.
I need to see movies for a living. I wish I could do that.
Yeah, it's pretty. I mean, I don't do that now. I mean, it doesn't pay, you know? And even in the budget for my Kickstarter, I didn't allot money for myself. The money's all for programmers, writers, producers, the studio, the guys who will be doing the cameras and editing the DVD Tuesday segment and posting it. Like, everybody gets paid but me, you know? What can you say? But yeah, so I still don't get paid, but whatever.
It's all about the passion, like you said earlier.
I bought my tickets. I bought my tickets for Age of Ultron, going to see it that Thursday. I really appreciate being able to talk to you and you guys giving me the time to be on your show. I hope.
No, thank you.
Any I last, hope it was as enjoyable for you as it was for me.
It was a blast, man. Anything you want to plug at the end?
Yeah. If you just go to filmthreat.com, you will find my Kickstarter. Please donate. If you want to see more DV Tuesday, if you want to hear my ranting and raving about movies on a weekly basis, you'll get that. And we'll be able to bring the Film Threat website back, which will be bigger and better than ever. And I'm really excited to get back in the game. I kind of feel just like, just maybe like how Bruce Wayne felt in Dark Knight Rises when he put the Batman suit on again and got the back, you know, the bat and flew around. Like I'm excited to do it because I'll now be able to do DV Tuesday without having to worry about any sort of TV crap. I can just like go in and talk to the audience directly. And I'm really excited to be able to do it. So I hope it happens. I really do.
Thank you to our guest, Chris Gore. Everybody clap.
Thank you.
Hey, thank you guys.
Thank you, man. We really appreciate
it. Yeah, we really appreciate you being on and talking with us, man.
Cool. And I'll see you at D23 in August.
There's a really cool film fest going on that weekend, too, called Cinepalooza that's sponsored by a local film race here, like called The Zone. It's really cool.
Wow. Well, the best movie theater chain in America, the Alamo Drafthouse in Texas.
I used to work for them for a little bit.
Wow. I love Tim League and what he's done with that. He's just sort of redefined the movie going experience and created a loyal audience that is passionate. So, I keep hearing rumors that a draft house is going to come into LA.
Oh,
I just hope that happens sometimes. Yeah, no, I'm sure I heard rumors of theater that they had got. So, I don't know. Between the Arclight and the draft house, I'm in heaven. That's my church.
I love Alamo Drafthouse. That's my favorite movie theater. It's like minutes from my house. So,
yeah. It's like I say. I live three blocks from the ArcLight Theater in Pasadena. So, it's amazing. Thanks a lot, you guys. I really appreciate
it. Cool, man. Thank you for coming on, hanging out with us.
Okay, and remember, filmthreat.com or check me out. I'm that Chris Gore on Twitter. I'm that Chris Gore on everything. On Instagram, everything. So,
cool.
Thanks a lot. I really appreciate it.
Cool, man. Thank you very much.
Hey, thank you.
All right. Take care.
All right, later. Bye.
Bye.
So there you have it, everyone, ladies and gentlemen, and boys and girls.
It was Chris fucking Gore.
That was really cool, man. I really appreciate him coming on the show.
Yeah, it was very awesome of him. And, you know, you could tell the real passion behind his the Film Threat magazine and the Film Threat Kickstarter. And I really have, like, high hopes, and I hope he gets funded.
I'm going to put some money into it.
I think I am, too.
I want to see it come to fruition, as they say.
I mean, who wasn't a huge fan of the DV Tuesday segment on Attack of the Show?
I definitely was. That was my favorite thing. I used to record every episode.
Yeah, and I would like to see him take that segment and grow on it and see what he could do. That'd be really awesome.
So yeah, check out the Kickstarter. Go to filmthreat.com. They made it really simple for you.
Yeah, it takes you directly to it.
Takes you straight to the Kickstarter, put some money into
it,
and
help
support,
man. And he has some really cool rewards if you donate. Like, I'm really interested, like, what of his secret collection that he has he's willing to give away.
Exactly. You know, some autograph script somewhere hiding around. That's what he's talking about.
And that's what he said.
So now, I know he's talking
about...
Maybe
it could be like a Kevin Smith autograph somewhere. So he said he was friends with him.
Uh-huh. So, and they're gonna have some cool podcasts. He can, you know, the guy can talk. So I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah,
he had a show for a while called Pod Crash. We didn't get to touch upon. He used to crash other people's podcasts.
Oh well, he kind of did this to that.
Yeah, he did. We were episode of Pod Crash tonight.
There you go, bringing it back.
That's awesome. So you know where else you can find us on all the interwebs? There's a bunch of new places right now.
Bunch of new places.
Bunch of new places. Well, a couple new places.
Okay.
We have, of course, metalgeeks.net. You have our good friends over at altness.com. Now you also
can
find us.
Don't forget
iTunes. Well, we'll get to iTunes.
Yeah, okay.
You can also find us now on yourcityradio.com. It's they have a lot of cool podcasts, a lot of cool radio shows, and it's basically streaming all the time. You can also, starting on this episode, find us at nerdbong.com. Really a couple of... Exactly. It's a group out of they're out of the UK, and they have a lot of really cool shows. And thanks to our friend over at Comical Podcast.
I don't think they would like it if I make a Sex Pistols joke, would they?
What's your Sex Pistols joke?
I don't really have a Sex Pistols joke. I was just wondering if I could come up with one, but I can't.
Well, way to be put on the spot.
Yeah, I know, right? I was hoping you would say no.
A lot of really cool shows like Comic Syndicate on there, Comical Podcast, which are good friends of the show. A lot of great stuff. So look for us on nerdbong.com. Look for us on iTunes. Subscribe to us there. Give us a 5-star review because that really does help get the word out about the show. That's all we ask from you.
Also, tell us what you think of the show.
Yep, themetalgeeks@gmail.com. And you can
also leave comments on us on our Twitter, Facebook, and even Instagram.
Yep, we're all Metal Geeks there.
Yep.
At Metal Geeks on all three of those. Let's talk about our sponsor. The VinylDead.com is where you can get all your really cool vinyl toys like Funko Pops and
The stuff that Kid you Robot. Have.
I'm just looking around my office and they're everywhere. So.
Having an abundance of.
Abundance is probably a plethora.
A plethora
of vinyl formed toys.
And what if I wanted to save money and buy
stuff? Did you want to save money?
I do want to save money.
I can save you 10%. Do you want to know how?
How?
Put in the code MetalGeeks10. When you check out on thevinyldead.com, you'll save 10% off your entire order. Did I mention 10% off your entire order?
As many times as I want.
As many times as you want.
Perfect.
You know how we were talking about Comic Palooza earlier with Chris Gore, our guest on this episode?
I really hope he can make it out.
I hope so, too.
Cool would it be if he comes down and we go see a movie at the Alamo Draft House together?
That's right. He can crash our pod again if you want.
He could run the show for all I care. That's
exactly right.
He was fun to talk to, man.
So if you want to buy tickets to the 4-day Comic Palooza, which is May 22nd through May 25th in Houston, Texas at the George R. Brown.
It's right around the corner.
We will have two things there going on for Metal Geeks. We'll have a live show on Monday at 11:30.
You can meet us in person.
At the MicroSearch panel room, apparently now is what it's called.
All right.
And also on Sunday, there's going to be Podcasting 103, which is going to be us and then Comical Podcast, BriFi Podcast, and NerdFoo Podcast.
Oh, they're going to be there too.
It's going to be a lot of fun.
It's going to be a hodgepodge of nerds.
Big geeky, nerdy pod crash.
If you ever felt nerdy or ever geeky, you would feel loved here.
Exactly.
Basically,
and we'll have
is.
Some cool stuff to give away. I believe that event. So come see us. Come.
Plus, there will be a chance to come see us live, where Carrie will sign your boobs,
in your butt too,
and your butt,
your buttocks,
your buttocks.
So yeah, you'll actually get to meet my new co-host who actually live in this same city, which is great.
It is pretty good, isn't it?
But if you want to save money on your tickets, put in the code Metal 2015. We'll save you $5 off a 4-day, and it'll save you $3 off your 1-day pass.
Okay, cool.
It's confirmed. It's
Metal
ready.
Geek 2015.
No, just Metal 2015.
Oh, Metal 2015.
Exactly.
You confused me.
I'm sorry. There's two different coupon codes.
I know. Right?
One's MetalGeeks10 for thevinyldead.com, and the other one is Metal 2015.
Okay.
Get it straight.
I got it. I think I got it.
So I think we touched upon a lot of great topics for this episode. A great interview with Chris.
Yeah, I got to throw in Turbo Kid in there.
Turbo Kid. You got to promote that.
I love that movie. It was a good movie.
I saw the trailer a few times after you saw the movie. It looks pretty cool.
It's awesome. Once it comes available, I'm going to buy it, and you're going to see how awesome it is.
So next week, you're not going to be here on probably the next episode, since you will be in Vegas for another event.
Yeah, for the NAB show.
NAB.
The NAB show.
So next episode will be my other co-host, Dave, who was actually out of town this weekend. So
I think it worked out just perfect.
It's great to have multiple co-hosts, because if one person can't do it, if I can ever do it, you guys can have free reign of whatever you want to talk about.
I'm going to take you up on that.
I'm going to have to teach you how to do everything. But
I could do everything.
Well, you'd have to.
I could click buttons.
You could.
And turn knobs.
And editing. Can you do the editing?
I did the editing before. One time.
Okay.
Don't look at me like that.
Oh, okay. You can't tell how I'm looking at you on a podcast. It's audio.
It's a very devious look.
Exactly right. But so I think we're gonna try to have some more special guests on, because a little behind the scenes, we put a little money into the show recently. We bought some more equipment, so now we can do these really cool Skype interviews into the mixer and hopefully sound better than they used to. And I have some cool ideas for some guests to come up.
All right. So any hints of who's coming up next?
No, I don't want to spoil anything, because
come on, just
I don't know yet.
Just give us a little cookie.
I've just put the feelers out there.
The feelers.
And I've been promising Larry Roberts from November's Doom that we're going to do the entire episode about the monkeys.
I don't know anything about the monkeys.
So that might be coming up pretty soon.
I'm going to have to brush up on my monkeys history.
You will, because Larry and myself are huge monkeys nerds, just all the trivia, everything about them, and I think it's going to be a fun episode. We got to watch a couple episodes that are really off the wall before we record, and we have to watch the movie Head. It's not a porno.
Sounded like a porn.
It's a movie that came out towards the end of the career, well, at the end of the career, after the show was over. It was actually written by Jack Nicholson.
Wait, the Jack Nicholson?
The Jack Nicholson.
Like the Joker Jack Nicholson.
Yes, and Raybert and Bob Rafelson used the money from Head to make Easy Rider. That's where they got the money to make Easy Rider from.
Really?
And it's a really off-the-wall, strange movie. I should not have probably seen it at 7 years old.
Probably explains a lot.
My grandma took me to Sound Warehouse. She's like, oh, you can rent something. Rent any movie. I was like, okay. I was like, oh, a monkey. So I rented that movie, and never been the same.
Damaged ever since.
Damaged. It's a really great movie. You've never seen it. It should be talked about in film history classes because it's really...
Should ask Chris about it.
Yeah, I should have. It's really
next time.
Yes, next time when he's back on the show. It's a very weird bucking the film system from the late 60s type of movie, you know what I mean? It's really cool. Definitely worth a watch. And if you're not a Monkees fan, you think, oh, it's real cheesy stuff, totally different. So,
okay.
Just putting that out there.
I will take your word for it.
So, let's wrap up the show.
Sounds good. Are we going to wrap this up?
With a big fucking bow.
Snap.
Like it's Christmas time.
Almost summertime.
Don't look at my box, man. you don't want to know what's in there.
I know what's in there. Bunch of sadness.
Oh. There's sadness in my box?
There's sadness in your box. Wow. Emptiness.
Wow. I have an empty box?
You do have
I thought it was just my dick, but...
That's why it's empty.
Oh, fuck you. All right, on that note... Fuck you.
Okay.
And good night.
Okay, fuck you very much.
And keep it geeky.
And keep it metal.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Later.
Hey, Geekazoids. Thanks for listening to another fine podcast brought to you by MSR Productions. All rights reserved, blah, 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 blah. For reviews, archives of our podcasts, and all your other metal geekery needs, please visit MSRcast.com. Keep it geeky. Keep it metal.